Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories. It's all right here for you. With this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Remember to visit us online, too, at besteveryou.com. And now here's your host, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Best Ever You Show. And with me, I have a co-host today, again, Dr. Katie Eastman. Katie, are you there?
I am here.
You are here, trying from a cell phone this time. We'll pray throughout the show that that thing doesn't drop. And if it does,
yes,
you get to call back in, and we'll make fun of you when you do. But
okay.
What did you say? Awesome. Yeah, it's all good. We worked on the radio show intro over the past 2 days. So we should have a new radio intro coming from Randy Kay that includes Dr. Katie with us. And doesn't she do an amazing job, Katie?
Oh, she is so talented. I love her voice. Very well done.
Yeah, let me send you to her website. It's randykaye.com. And she's the voice of our show and the voice for the Motivation Marathon and the voice of so many things. Like I was joking last week, she's even the voice, Katie, of like phone systems. Like, press one.
Oh, wow.
This is funny. But to our wonderful list of guests, we're going to add pro football players. Isn't that cool? We've interviewed a lot of people. And, go ahead.
Well, I grew up with football all my whole life. My brothers both played football, and so I am really excited about this. This is going to be fun.
Well, and I was a football cheerleader, and we did get our girl questions out of the way before we went on the air, just to tease them a little bit. But we've got Vernon Turner with us. And we're so excited to have him with us. Hi, how are you today?
Hey, how are you ladies doing?
Good. And I want to just send everybody to your website as well. It's vernonturner.com. So you can read all about your book and everything that you did as a football player. But I'm not sure if we want to start. What do we want to start with, Katie? Do we want to start with football or being a new author? What do you think?
Boy, I just give it up to Vernon to say whatever he wants to start with. Whatever inspires him.
Wow.
There you go.
That's pretty broad. I wish you would have narrowed it down a little bit.
Okay, I'm going to start with football then because I think that's just way cool. I would love to hear about how you went from as a little kid to becoming an NFL football player because I think there are so many parents, kids, everybody wants to be a pro sports guy and some, play football or basketball or baseball. And that's every little kid's dream.
Yeah, you know what? I tell you, I've had many parents come to me and ask me, how did you do it? How did you get from one end to the other? And it's funny, I say, Steven Spielberg could not have written my script. It was an unbelievable tale, a journey that you think it's fictional. Honestly, I had no business playing professional football. According to a lot of people, I had no business playing football at all. But there were extenuating circumstances, as far as I was concerned, that helped me catapult to the highest level. All started from Pop Warner football. And I've learned at an early age that the game of football, it's aggression built. You can let out a lot of aggression. You can let out a lot of frustration, a lot of anger, a lot of built-up resentment. You can let out all of that in the game of football. And so happens I had a lot of that. As you well may know, I'm assuming you guys read my book or, know the summation about the book. I had a lot of that. And I say today, the game of football, it saved my life. It helped me save my family. And I owe it. I owe my life pretty much to the game of football. So I think the extenuating circumstances that came upon me, it helped me reach the highest level because with every, just like you said, with every kid. Every kid wants to be a professional professional somebody, whether it be golf, tennis, baseball, basketball, it doesn't matter what it is. And I was one of those kids. I was one of those kids that wanted to follow my idol, Walter Payton, and be a running back in the National Football League. And it changed. The end result was the same, but the reason for it changed. And it went from me wanting to do it because it was my childhood dream to something to where if I didn't do it, I was going to lose my family. So that alone, that's all I focused on, was keeping my brothers and sisters together when my mom and dad passed. So that was my driving force in making it to the highest level.
Do you talk a little bit about Walter Payton and what kind of role he played in your life? Because at one point, either you reached out to him or he reached out to you. I can't remember which, but you were a running back for 6 seasons for the Buffalo Bills, the Rams, the Lions, the Buccaneers. That's amazing.
Yeah, I tell you, it was in college when I got a dreadful call from my aunt who was living in my home while I was in college, attending college. At that time, both my parents were passed, and I was pretty much the disciplinarian for my brothers and sisters from 12 and a half hours away. I was grounding my brothers and sisters from my dorm room, my telephone dorm room.
Wow.
So I was the disciplinarian, and I received a call that I'll never forget. I was standing up when I took the call. My aunt called me. She says, "Sweetheart, I just can't do this anymore." And I wasn't sure what she was talking about. She says, "You know, I can't care for the kids anymore. I got to split them up, and I have to move. I can't do this anymore." I took that call, ladies, when I was standing up, and my knees literally buckled when I heard that, because the first thing I thought of was my mom, was, you know, her telling me, make sure if anything happened to us, you take care of the family, make sure we all stay together. And that's all I thought about. And that was something, because that changed my life completely. I went from having a subpar career in college, you know, solid. It was solid. It wasn't anything great. And I was content with that. I was, you know, trying to work hard to finish school so I can go get a job. You know, I wasn't even so much – I guess I didn't have the confidence in myself to go and try for the National Football League. But once that happened and I needed money and needed it fast, me selling my television, my stereo equipment, all that I had to sell to send my money back home, then I started cutting hair in college. I was hustling in college, but it wasn't enough. So I turned to the game that I fell in love with, and I called my high school football coach, Fred Oliveri, and I said, "Fred, I'm going to turn pro. I got to try out." And without a beat, without missing a beat, this guy says, "Okay, let's get an agent." It wasn't like, "Are you kidding me? You have no chance in hell." He didn't say that. He said, "Okay, let's do this. Let's get an agent." And that's how it all changed for me. And that's when I decided to reach out to Walter Payton. He was my idol since age 7 and a half. I watched him play. He was an awesome, unbelievable athlete. Not only that, he played the game with passion. And that took heart to me, because I played the game with passion. I sometimes played with tears in my eyes, you know, because I was playing and playing so hard. Well, I came across a fan club in a magazine while I was in college, and I said, "Well, you know what, I have nothing to lose." So I wrote him, told him everything I was going through. And I say about 2.5 to 3 weeks later, he replied. And I stared at the letter for about maybe 15 minutes before I actually started reading. I couldn't believe it. And he just, you know, gave me his condolences, and he gave me words of encouragement. Plus, he gave me his training regimen. And I wouldn't wish that training regimen on my worst enemy. It was something that I put myself through pure hell, you know. And it helped me. And I'll never forget that. And I'm totally, eternally grateful for that.
Katie, did you want to ask something? You're pausing. I know, I can hear you taking it all in.
I just have to say, we hear so many inspiring stories, but your story just hit me right in the gut, in the deepest place in my heart, because you really took a tragedy, a crisis, and you didn't miss a beat. You just took over. You said, okay, what am I going to do? I got to take care of my family, and I don't have time to think about this. I'm just going to do it. And so I am so inspired by that, and I think that's really phenomenal. And what I want to ask you is, where did that come from? How did you have the courage and the guts?
Well, you know, with that, and I really do appreciate those awesome words. I really do. But, you know, with that type of strength, it came some sacrifice, too. I mean, I was accused of not caring at the funeral, especially at my dad's funeral. I was accused of, you know, not showing any type of emotion. But what people didn't know until they actually read the book was how torn up I was, actually was, when I received a call when my dad passed. Because if you read the book, we didn't really get along that well because of, you know, just the past. Just to rewind a little bit, just the whole thing with my mom. My mom was an unbelievable lady. I mean, I can't say enough about her. I appreciate her so much more now than I ever did when she was alive. And it took many, many years, over 30 years, for me to get the courage to actually talk about her. It took many, many years for me to even go to her gravesite after the fact. It was some pretty deep stuff that went down, you know. I mean, my grandmother was the nucleus of my family. My mom was the third youngest of 10 kids, and my grandmother raised all of them by herself. So that strength came from my grandmother. My grandmother had such unbelievable morals and values. She was well-respected through the neighborhood in Bed-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn. Everyone knew her. Everyone respected her. Everyone loved her. She was a 5-foot, 215-pound lady that had a voice of a 6-foot-4, 365-pound person.
Yeah.
And everyone listened to her.
Yeah.
So, you know, when my mom spiraled down like she did, she was into prostitution, heavily addicted to drugs. You know, people wondered why, you know. I found out why at age 11. And, you know, there were times prior to that that my mom would look at me and, she, you know, she would just look through me like I was a glass. Cold eyes, borderline hatred. It was so cold sometimes, guys, that I would have to look away and not look at her again. And then I found out at age 11 why. I came home from school, went to the restroom, opened up the door, my mom there shooting up, literally with a needle in her arm, shooting up. I yelled at her, "Why do you keep doing that to yourself?" Now, I knew my mom did drugs. I never saw her do it until that moment. And she summoned me in that bathroom, and she told me the story. You know, with tears in her eyes, and she's still shooting up, and she's telling me this story about how she was going home from school, you know, band practice, and two guys grabbed her, you know, drug up on top of a roof, third man waiting, and they brutally attacked her. They brutally raped her. They were going to throw her off that roof until they hurt someone, and they just threw her to the ground and ran. Shortly thereafter, my mom said she found out she was pregnant. And I am the result of that. So that explained why my mom looked at me the way she did at times. And for that, you know, I just felt like trash. I felt like I felt responsible. I felt it was just so many things. My self-esteem, everything, it was just shot. It was gone. And, you know, thank goodness for the people. You know, there were some people. There were teachers and, you know, people, some coaches that just kept working on me and kept working with me to just build up the confidence, what little confidence I can build up.
Did you ever tell anyone that? So, like, did the coaches and teachers know that about you? Did you say, "Hey, you
no.
know that"? Yeah, no, you didn't.
No,
but they knew something was up.
No, they just knew that I was a very reserved kid, and pretty much kept to myself. You know, the thing of it was that I became more protective of my mom, you know, because of what she went through and the guilt I felt throughout the whole thing. But as years went on, I became more in love with football. and I was obsessed with the game, and my mom knew that. And she would really, to keep me in line, she would ground me from going to practice. Now, you know, kids don't like practice.
Oh, yeah. I mean, mom, four boys, boy, that.
Yes, I was in love with practice.
Yeah.
So she would ground me. And, you know, with everything, I was braiding hair, changing diapers, cooking dinners, cleaning house, and babysitting at age 9. That's all I knew what to do. I was doing all of that at age 9. So,
well, I have a question for you right there, just if I can stop you for 1 second and just ask. There was a choice you made right throughout your childhood to not do drugs. Yes? I mean, how when you see that and so forth, do you not become part of it? Is there a choice that you make, or did you do drugs too, or what happened to you as a kid? What did you go through?
Well, that was pretty much a choice, but it was almost a choice that I had no choice to make but that. My family, I was built to lead, as you can tell. I was built to lead. I was built to lead the pack, not to be a follower, just because of me being the oldest, me taking care of my brothers and sisters. And I knew what that stuff did to my mother. It killed her. That's what killed my mom, is drugs. So that was an option. That was a no-brainer for me. You know, could I have used that as an excuse to go that direction? Sure, probably could have. But I was embedded to make sure that I take care of my family by my mom almost on a daily basis, that I knew what I had to do. I knew what had to be done. It wasn't easy at all, to be honest with you. There were times when I went on my knees, and I just kept asking why, especially with what happened with my mom. You know, I would wish her dead all the time, you know, because she was on drugs. I used to wish her dead because she would ground me from playing football. I used to wish her dead because I didn't have a normal childhood. And, I think I hit my knee one time too many. Because the next thing I knew, you know, my mom was gone. And guess what? I'm sitting at her gravesite, you know, and I'm sitting here talking to this woman and, just letting her know how sorry I am for wishing her dead. And
But, you know the neat thing about you and all of that difficulty and everything she went through, I think it's, did she ever tell you that she made a choice to keep you or anything like
she
that?
She didn't have to say it. She did it, you know. It's like, that's the thing that hits me more than anything, is the fact that no one would have faulted her at all had she had an abortion.
Oh, no.
Or an adoption. No one. But this unbelievable lady chose to keep me. For some unknown reason, she chose to, and that's where I'm at now. You know, I'm at a point to where I'm not going to let this be a mistake. I'm building this legacy, and I'm leaving a legacy that she's going to be proud of. That's what this is all about now for me.
And we keep mentioning this book and referring to it, and it's actually called The Next Level, A Game I Had to Play, and it really tells all about your story in much more detail than we could ever cover in, you know, an hour chat here. It took me a really long time to have you on this radio show because that book is so profound. It is just so you're so vulnerable. And you make yourself so vulnerable. I don't know if I'm saying that exactly right. Katie, you can pretty me up a little bit here. But, you know, you make yourself so vulnerable in that book. You tell everything, and the courage is just an amazing book about just your courage to write all that and tell everything and just how you've overcome so much. It's really an amazing, amazing book.
I asked myself, Elizabeth, one question a while ago. I asked myself, if I died today, how would I be remembered? And I didn't like the answer. So that's when I finally got the courage. I mean, I thought about doing this, but I thought about it in a joking manner during an interview back in 1994. I told a reporter that I was going to write a book about my life story and it's going to be a bestseller. And it, that was back in 1994. And I didn't mean that. I didn't mean no way in heck was I going to write a book about my life. No way. But here I am, you know. I asked myself that one question, and I didn't like it. And I wanted to do something that was going to be life-changing. I wanted to do something that was going to leave an impact, not only with the people around me, but the world. And the best way to do that was just to tell my story and hopefully help people that are in similar circumstances that I was in, you know. I just, every time I work with kids, I always ask them, hey, you tell your mom, you tell your dad you love them? You know, and they look at me like I'm crazy. Coach VT, what are you talking about? I say, hey, did you tell your parents you love them? You know, just out of the blue. And then I get parents to come to me and say, what are you doing to my kids? They actually act like they like me now.
Like me,
you know,
now.
So, I mean, that alone, it makes me feel good because that means that they are actually listening to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I'm saying, it matters. And again, I want to pay this thing forward. It's just I have to leave my mark and leave a legacy, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, and to most of us, we're like, okay, well, you did that being an NFL player, but you took it a step further.
You know, I enjoy and appreciate my career now than I ever did when I was playing. Even after, years after, I didn't really get a full appreciation of what I actually accomplished until I wrote the book. When I wrote The Next Level of Game, I had to play, and I went upstairs in my office in my home, and I closed the door when I decided to write the book, and I sat in my office for 2.5 days. Of course I did. You know, I went to the restroom, I ate and all that stuff, but I wrote the core book segment of my book within 2.5 days. I was done. It was like opening up a floodgate.
Yeah.
I took an audio digital recorder and I just continued to talk and I talked and I talked and I talked. And I had over 18 something hours or 20 something hours of talk time.
Wow.
And that's how I formed my book. It was a therapeutic thing for me. And then it took me a while to even get the courage to actually decide to publish it, because I went back and I read it over. I'm like, oh, my God, the world is going to hear about all this stuff.
Oh, isn't that a feeling when you write a book? You're like, oh, do I really want people to know that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was tough. It really was. And what the crazy part about it was that, you know, I did it. I called my brothers and sisters, and I said, look, I'm going to write this book about my journey, but it's about us. And I said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to get the first set of copies, and you guys are going to get the first copy, and I will not release the book until you guys read it and give me the green light. And, you know, after the tears, because there was a lot of things in that book that my siblings didn't even know about.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after the tears and the, I guess, the connection we formed all over again, they say, go ahead, VT. We love you. We support you. Go ahead. So that's where I'm at now. I'm just trying to get it out to the world now. You know?
Oh yeah, Katie, did you want to? I know I'm talking and talking and talking. you're quiet.
Well, you know, the counselor in me, who's worked with kids for years who've gone through trauma, and the word resilient just keeps coming up. You know, you hear people say, "Well, kids are resilient." Well, you know what? Kids aren't always resilient. What it takes is a kid who is open to receiving support and love from adults who are around them, a kid who is available, a kid who makes himself vulnerable. And I just really hear in you, Vernon, that kid who is teaching other kids the value and the importance of being honest and authentic with your raw emotion. And I just think that's, to me, as a counselor who's worked with so many defended kids for so many years, is so valuable in writing this book. What a gift.
Well, thank you so much. And I tell you, it didn't start with just me. I had so many great people in my corner, just like you said. I had the good sense to listen to the people that were in my corner. It all started with, you know, my Pop Warner Football League coach, Bill Thatcher, who taught me never to quit. And then my high school football coach, Fred Oliveri, who is my absolute life. He took over, and he taught me how to fight and not to quit fighting, and use all the naysayers, all the negativity, and use it for fuel, and use it to my advantage. And you know, it's funny because when I do coaching or training, you know, kids, whatever have you, I talk to them about life. I talk to them how to be young men and women. I talk to them how to represent themselves, how to be an ambassador, you know, how to carry themselves, because they are being watched, just like I was being watched. I'm being watched now. You know, kids are so influential. They're like a ball of clay, and the adults and the people that are around them, they mold them. Now, I want to make sure that I'm giving the best I can give the kids that are watching me, the kids that I'm talking to and talking with. I want them to get the best of me. I want to be able to mold that clay to help them be the best person that they can be. And if I don't represent myself and carry myself the right way, and they see that in public, they see that, I'm not doing myself nor them any justice at all. So I have a huge responsibility. Unlike Charles Barkley, I am a role model. I am a role model. I've been a role model from day one, and I want to try to – I make my mistakes. Don't get me wrong. I'm continuously making mistakes. But overall, I try to do the right thing, and I'm hoping, you know, people who are around me realizes that, you know, hey, you know, this guy's trying to do the thing. He's doing it right. He's trying to do it right, you know. So that's what I'm about now, just making sure that I'm a great ambassador for the people that are watching, the young people that are watching me, and they'll pay it forward. And, you know, that's how this world will be a better place. You know, I hope so, you know.
Yeah, yeah. What, with the book, are you doing training sessions or coaching sessions, you know, like speaking types of things? Is there merchandise that goes with the book, you know, those types of things? Because I could see this being very popular, especially with, you know, NFL, anything associated.
Well, I tell you, it's I'm like a tree that in the branches are starting to branch out.
Yeah.
I do inspirational speaking. I do personal training, and I've been getting a lot of clients from out of state that does the phone training and email training. So, you know, the grass never grows underneath me. I'm always on the go. I'm always doing things. I'm getting ready to launch my sports apparel line. It's called True Player 30. And hopefully, at the start of the new year, it'll be officially launched. So I got a lot going on. And I'm trying to avoid it, but I don't know how long I'm going to be able to avoid it. You know, I get people that want to turn my story into something more than just a book. I'm really scared about that. But, you know, God is going to let me know when to pull that trigger. To just see my life on a big screen, that's the scariest thing in the world for me right now. So, but
why
again,
is it scary to you?
Oh, well, probably just one particular part of my life that I can't see on a big screen yet, and that is my mom. Mm-hmm. I can't see anyone portraying her and going through what she went through.
Yeah.
I can't see that yet. So, no, I'm not ready for that. So when the time comes, though, and when I'm strong enough, then it'll be what it'll be. But for now, I haven't gotten that strong yet. So
yeah, I can definitely see that though as part of this. I'm you know what I mean, being made into a movie. It just seems like that's a natural fit.
Well, yeah. Well, I tell you, I hear it all the time. I really do.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, again, that's something that's going to have
no,
to,
I hear you.
You know, wait for a little while until I'm ready to,
for it. Yeah.
You know, for that, yes.
Yeah. Katie?
Okay, well, I was thinking, when you spoke earlier, Vernon, you said you got down on your knees, and I wondered, has faith played a part in your life?
Faith, you said?
Yes, faith.
Oh, yes. You know what? For all the bad things that have happened in my life, and, you know, especially, you know, I remember when my dad passed and I received that call and I had to fly home from college. I'm on the airplane, I'm flying home, and, you know, tears are running down my eyes, and I'm looking up on the, you know, above the plane, on top of the plane, I'm asking him, God, why you keep doing this to me? Why is this happening to me? What did I do so bad that you take both my parents away? What am I going to do now? How am I going to support? You know, and I'm asking him, you know, I'm upset with him. I'm confused. I don't know what I did wrong. But at the same time, I'm asking him, please give me a sign, give me a light, give me the strength to pull this through, because I don't know how I'm going to do it, you know. And by him having me go through all of that and pushing through, it solidified my faith that much more. I became stronger in my faith because of that, because of the fact that, you know, he gave me the strength, he gave me the light to go and see everything through like I did. So,
you know,
my faith, I wouldn't have made it.
Yeah, Katie, isn't that interesting what he just said with, I know, where you say, what did I do? What did I ever do to kind of deserve this? What did I do wrong? And so forth. You know, mm-hmm. So many people say that. You know, my husband, both of his parents passed away, you know, within a couple of years of each other, and he said that. And my dad, a stroke survivor, would be in the hospital crying, saying, "What did I ever do to anybody to deserve this?" What do you think? What do you have to add to that, Katie?
No, I work with cancer patients every day, and what I have to add to that is what I hear them say when they get into that space. They pull themselves out because life is so precious. And what I heard someone say this yesterday. She started to go into that, "Oh, this really sucks" place. And she said that, but then her very next words were, "And I don't have time to stay and say this sucks. I need to make this work today." And so what I am inspired by in Vernon's entire story is how he did that over mm-hmm. and over and over mm-hmm. again. And to me, that is spirituality. That is when we get on our knees and we go, "Oh, God, this sucks. Why?" But we make a choice in that moment to turn it around and say, "And what am I going to do about it?" And that's the difference, is getting up and doing something about it.
You know, my high school football coach, who I love dearly, Fred Oliveri, a couple of weeks prior to me writing the book, I would call him from time to time just to see how he's doing. And I filled him in on me, you know, getting ready to write the book. And we were reminiscing about the past. And I said, "You know, Coach, I don't know how in the heck I made it through all of that, man." He said, "V, you really don't." I said, "Yeah, Fred, I really don't." He says, "You know, you just think about the big picture." He said, "Do you honestly think God would have put all of that upon you if he didn't feel like you were able to handle it?" And he said that. I got to thinking, you know, God is not going to put anything in front of anybody's plate that they can't handle. And it made me think about everything that I went through and how I dealt with it and how I handled it. And some I wish I can go back and change, of course, because of mistakes, because we're human. But overall, the overall picture is that I came through every one of them. I really did. And again, to this day, I scratch my head. I wonder how in the world. But then now, the way I'm built now, ladies, there's nothing in this world that can be thrown at me that I cannot handle. that's how I feel now because of what I went through. So hopefully that'll be a message that I can pass on to others, you know.
I feel like that too some days, or most of the days actually too. It's like, okay, try and throw something at me. I dare you, you know, kind of thing, knock on wood here. But, you know, you're just like, I can handle it and so forth. But when you have something thrown at you and for that moment you're like, oh, man, this sucks, what do you do and where do you go and how do you respond to it? So where I'm going with that is, can you maybe teach people a little bit of what you have within you?
I'm pretty much, you know, every pun intended, I'm an open book. You know,
yeah.
I really am. The only thing I can say is that I'm pretty passionate about life now. I'm very passionate. It doesn't take much for me to get watery-eyed now because I'm so appreciative of everything and everyone around me. It doesn't take much for me to really feel something that someone else is going through, and it hits me. That's the vulnerability that opened up that I kind of hate right now because it, you know, it's hard for me to keep my emotions in check sometimes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, I'm very, very passionate on everything that I do. And I hope, and my hopes is that when people see me and when I'm doing my speaking engagement, when I'm trying to get through to my athletes or whomever I'm talking with, that they honestly look at me and they believe me because I'm sincere. Just only thing
before
I can say is,
you are sincere. That's my favorite thing about you. And getting to know you over the past year, that's my absolute, that describes you perfectly. You are so sincere.
Well, I tell you, when you go through some of the things that I've gone through, and you look in the mirror and you just check yourself and you know, you take ownership and responsibilities for the things that did occur in your life. And then you just try to make a change. You just try to make a difference. You say, okay, this is the hand that's dealt. How are you going to play this hand? What are you going to do? You know, what difference? I guess the big question I ask myself is, what difference are you going to make in other people's lives? And how are you going to do it? And, again, that one question I asked myself, if I die today, you know, how am I going to be remembered? And that was a frightening. It was really scary. My answer was just, I was so unhappy with the answer that I gave.
What was it?
And that answer was, I don't know. I don't know. I
so
want
to
know.
You didn't go to as a running back for the NFL? Or, I mean, because that didn't, do you know what I mean? That wasn't the immediate answer?
No.
Yeah,
no,
so deeper than that.
No. As I look at it, I come full circuit and I look at the big picture, you know, football was a huge, huge part of my life. And when people go to get my book and they look at the cover of my book, they're going to say, oh, yeah, this is another football story.
Mm-mm.
That's the first thing they're going to think. When you turn over the book and you read the caption, it'll make you think, this may not be all just about football. And then when you actually start reading my story, you're going to say, you know what, this isn't all about football. This is about life. And that's what I want. I mean, I pay tribute to the game of football because of what it did for me and my life and my family. That's the reason why I put football on the cover of my book, because I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah.
But when you open it up and you start reading and you start seeing all the things that occurred, all the things I had to go through, the way I put my body through hell, the relationships I had with my parents, and the mistakes I made, just all of that, the mistakes I made in college, the mistakes I've made, period. it's all out there, you know. And I just want people to say, hey, you know, this cat came clean. You know, he's trying to do it right, you know.
Did you ever have any other titles that you were thinking about for the book, or was it always titled The Next Level, The Game I Had to Play, A Game I Had to Play?
You know what? I really didn't. I sat when I decided to write the book, and I actually did the book. I wrote the book, and I said to myself, what am I going to call this? And the first thing I said was The Next Level. That's the first thing that came to my mind. But I didn't want just The Next Level. You know, I wanted something to really, you know, make people think, you know, what is this guy talking about? You know, I really need to know what he's talking about. And the next thing I thought of, a game I had to play.
Yeah.
You know, it was a game I truly had to play because, ladies, if I did not play the game at the highest level, my family would have been split apart.
Yeah.
That's fact. It's not fictional. It's fact. So the title was so fitting, and that was really the only thing that came to mind.
Yeah. Well, when I got your book for review, I did have that reaction of, oh, boy. Football player, if we have to go on the radio and talk about football for an hour, it's going to be a really, really short conversation on my part. You know, I'm like, oh, no. You know, and I really had to take a look at it and go, why am I receiving this book? It's about football, and we're best ever you. And then I turned it over, and I'm like, oh, duh, you know, this is why I'm receiving this book, because it's really football's a layer of it, but, you know, it's so much more than that. And then it really took me a while. I mean, I read your book probably in about 3 days, 4 days' time, but then I've reread it several times over the past year to kind of myself get the courage to interview you because, part of me was like, oh, man, you know, he's gone through hell and back. And how do I have him on the radio? Is he going to talk about everything like that? You know, it really took a lot for me to get ready for this interview because some of the topics are so sensitive. And you wonder, you know, and then I thought to myself, well, you know what, he's clearly ready to talk about these things or he wouldn't have written the book. So let's let him talk and I'll be quiet. But, you know, it's just an amazing book. I hope everybody listens to the show and really goes out there and buys your book. Again, for everybody listening, it's called The Next Level, A Game I Had to Play. And again, we're speaking with Vernon Turner, if you've just tuned in, which I know a bunch of people have. And if I don't know if you're interested in this, Vernon, but, you know, maybe people might want to call in and ask you questions. If you want to do that, the phone number is 714-868-0220. I can certainly open up the phone lines if somebody would like to ask you a question or comment on the show.
Yeah, that's fine.
Absolutely. So, Katie, did you want to ask something more? I want to check
yeah,
time
I'd
while
love,
you're...
I love that he's working with children. And so I want to ask you, Vernon, what have you learned from them?
What have I learned from kids? I've learned that they're extremely honest for the most part, and they're very impressionable. And that's why I do a lot of speaking engagements, and the first thing I give accolades and credit to are teachers and coaches. They are in such a position to change lives. They're so important. I don't think they realize how important they are, especially middle school, elementary, middle school teachers and coaches, and of course high school. But I mean, you're just a piece of clay at that time.
Yeah.
And you know, if you hit a teacher or coach that shows interest and really gives you the attention that you need. I mean, I don't think teachers realize how much of an influence they are in these kids. And for me to be in a position to change lives like that, to be able to teach and coach and just talk to my young athletes, and even the kids in my neighborhood, they'll come by and shoot hoops in my front yard, and, you know, and I'll just get to talking to them, you know. And it'll just be about life, you know, about how, you know, how grateful they should be for, you know, to have their parents, and it could be so much worse off. And then I'll share little segments of my life with them, you know. And it's priceless, you know, to see a young man or woman take what you've mentioned, what you've talked to them about, and they come back to you and say, hey, coach or VT, hey, I really do appreciate what you said. I get it. I get what you're saying, and I appreciate you. That puts tears in my eyes when I get that reaction, that feedback. So, You know, kids are awesome. You know, they're great. And for me to be able to be in a position to change, potentially change a life for the good, oh, man, I mean, I'm living a dream. I'm living a dream.
Do you, I'm just curious, and I don't know the answer to this, do you ever coach football?
Yeah, and on and off. In fact, when I moved out here to Texas, this is the longest segment of me not coaching high school level football. I was coaching it prior to that in Illinois, in North Carolina. But here, the only thing I've been doing is training athletes to get ready for the upcoming seasons. I'm I don't know how you would call it, but I haven't made myself, I guess I haven't exposed myself to the high school coaches around.
Yeah, I was going to say, they must not know you're there.
I don't think they really know
they
that
do
I'm
now.
here.
Yeah.
I don't go advertising the fact, oh, yeah, you know, I'll do it. But what I do is the one-on-one type deals, I'm good with that. You know, my training my kids and getting them ready for the upcoming season, I'm okay with that. I'm good with that. You know, I don't have to be in a team setting like that. I mean, I would if I was approached and they asked me. It's hard for me to say no.
You know, I wish you would. It's just me here to you because, I I'm a mom of four boys, and they're 11, 13, 15, and 17. And some of their best experiences as young men have been amazing athletic coaches. And I mean the ones who have played pro baseball or pro football. And then they work with the kids, but they have no ego whatsoever, like, oh, I'm a pro football player, you know, kind of thing, and here's my autograph, I don't really want to teach you anything kind of thing. And there's a lot of that, but when guys like you take the time to really work with the kids, you change lives. I mean, you change lives, and it may not be that you turn out every one of them a professional football player or a baseball player, but their mentality and their thinking and their I don't know. There's my one son is on the swim team now, and the coach has changed my child's life. He's a straight-A student now. I mean, just absolutely changed his life.
Well, I'm not don't get me wrong. I think being in sports, teams, especially team sports, is the best thing a kid can go through. But I'm not just about that.
I know.
I want the kids to be successful individuals. Regardless of what it may be a lawyer, maybe a doctor, maybe a teacher, regardless of what the profession may be, I want them to be an ambassador, you know, at their position and pay the thing forward, regardless of what it is.
That's
so
exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, it just, you know, it's sort of not about sports at all, really.
Yeah.
It's so cool. I mean, my one son, he could be the worst baseball player ever, but the mindset has changed.
Yeah.
And he's not the worst baseball player ever or anything like that. He's a really good catcher. But you know what I mean? Just his whole drive and everything has just completely changed with really interesting coaching through the years. It's really cool, the influence.
And the thing of it is that I'm talking to all the parents out there right now, whoever's listening, when I say this. You're going to get your kid to come across a teacher or a coach that – they will listen to them even more than they will listen to you.
Absolutely.
Do not get mad. Don't get upset. Embrace it. Embrace it.
Yeah.
And work it to your advantage because that's just the way it is. That's just the nature of the beast. That your kid is probably going to listen to his high school baseball, football, basketball coach a little bit more than he'll listen to mom and dad because mom and dad is in the ear all the time. And then mom and dad sometimes sounds like Charlie Brown's teacher. Exactly.
Yeah.
But when it's coming from someone else that they don't have to go home to, they tend to listen a lot more. So I'm telling you, parents, don't get upset or don't get any, I guess, a resentment towards the coach because, you know, he's feeling like you're feeling like he's taking your position. No, he's not. He's enhancing it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I've got a child about ready to graduate high school, and through football, he's discovered a love of sports medicine. And so they've taken my son and done on-the-job job shadowing with him for a variety of things. And it has just been an amazing influence in his life. And you're right there, because he would come home and say, well, the coach says, and we're like, okay, you know, kind of thing. Okay.
Yeah,
and
I know. Trust me. I've gotten parents to come to me, and I thank goodness that I haven't had any of them come to me with resentment or saying, you know, that's my job. You don't tell them to do that. I've never gotten that. It's always been, thank you. I really do. Whatever you're doing to my son, you keep doing it type stuff because, you know,
Exactly.
Yeah, so I'm very proud of that.
Oh, I imagine. Go ahead, Katie, sorry.
Well, I was saying, you know, there's a saying, and I can't remember what it is, but I know one part of it is our kids are not our own. You know, they're meant to be shared with the community around us, and everybody helps teach our kids. And I think it's a natural part of growing up is learning to listen to other kinds of adults. And so I agree with you completely that it's so important that parents allow that to happen if it's a positive influence, because it'll just make all the difference in the world.
Oh, it does.
Absolutely. Yep. I mean, it's a village to raise a child.
It really is. Absolutely.
Does that mean you're going to babysit? No, I'm tired.
I hear you.
All right. So we've got, I just keep it, and I'm serious. Some days I'm just like, oh, I'm tired. There's 8 minutes left in the show, and I was wondering if we could go to football for a minute, and don't be scared because it's me talking here for a minute, but do fill in the gaps. You're known for a play that you made, and I was just wondering if you could talk about that, because I'm sure people listening would love to hear about what you did.
Well, yeah, that's a storybook in itself.
Cool.
Within my book. I probably, when I do finally get the courage to move forward with a project of a movie magnitude, they will probably end the movie on that one play. And that play was, I was blessed to be the first man ever to return a punt for a touchdown for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But the big story of that is the fact that it was done against a team that released me the year before. And it was against a team that I had really, really bad conflicts with. So, again, Steven Spielberg could not have written that script. It would have been fictional. But this was the actual life story to where I got cut from the Detroit Lions, and I had issues with the head coach. Mm-hmm. And then the Tampa Bay Buccaneers picked me up the following year. And I believe they knew what they were getting. I believe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers knew that they were getting a sleeping giant. They knew they were getting a guy that had a chip on his shoulder. So that particular game, I knew something special was going to happen. I just didn't know what it was going to be. And prior to that, that whole week prior to that game, I got into like two or three fights during practice because I was so intense. And it was an emotional game for me because when I crossed the end zone, you know, I looked at the crowd, and then afterwards I looked up and I just said, thanks, Mom and Dad, you know, hey, I did it, you know. And I don't know if people notice the pictures that's on online, on Google, whatever. You'll see me playing, and you'll see a cross on both sides of my, on one side, on outside of both of my legs. And that's for my mom and dad. I've done that since I was in college. And I saw one of the action shots, trading cards of that. And that's all I stared at. I didn't care about how cool I looked, you know, carrying a football on a card. I saw that cross, and I said, okay, all right, my dad is showing. My mom was on the left, my dad was on the right. So I knew which one was showing on which card or which photo. So that was pretty special to me, too.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. Is that the cover of the book?
Yeah.
Sorry, if that's it. Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
Yes.
It's the football and me going, is that the cover of the book? <You know? laughs> That's amazing. Yeah, and I love the fact that you can hear it, Katie, can't you? It's like it's not about how cool I looked or whatever. It's back to the whole everything he's playing for.
Well, it's what we always talk about. It's meaningful. It's a deeper sense of meaning and, yeah. and contributing and giving back and making a difference. And everything that he's dedicated his life to is what we talk about all the time with Best Ever You, which is that ripple of love.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest part, I had a really tough time in college. I really did, especially my junior year. It was a really tough time because that was a time when I was really, really missing my parents. And it was the start of my junior year. I don't know where to this day, I don't know where I got this number, 1,230. And I said that was going to be the yards that I was going to rush for the season. And I remember the very last game, it was the championship game. I was about maybe 50 or 60 yards short. And I was running like no man has ever ran before. And I was crying the whole time. And my teammates saw it. My offensive line saw it. And they said, "We're going to get you this, B. We're going to get you this." And they kept picking me up every time I ran the ball, and they kept hugging me. And they finally got it to me. And I got a standing ovation, walked over to the bench, and I cried for the rest of the day. I mean, I was so overwhelmed. And that's what I'm talking about, the support that I've gotten from day one. I couldn't have done any of this without the people, having my back and showing the support and giving me the support that I needed. So to everyone, and you know who you are, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you. I really do.
Yeah, we thank you too, because we just adore you. We were talking about you before we went on the air about including you in our book, because we have a book coming out. You know this. It's called Percolate. And Katie and I really want to write about you in the book. Would you be open to that, maybe?
Yeah.
And I don't want to, you know, make you say yes on the radio or anything like that, but I think you would have such a special contribution to our book if we could share your story within our book.
Absolutely. Go ahead, ladies.
All right. We'll send you the copy when we read it. We were picking three people that we would like to share their stories with in the book, and we kept coming back to you and saying, you know, he's got to be in there. And then we're like, well, let's just talk to him today and make sure. Don't you think, Katie?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely, especially because you're such a great example, Vernon, of someone who as a kid turned it around, listened, changed, listened to adults. You're such a role model, not only to all the parents, to all the adults out there, who just don't know how to deal with tragedy and who get stuck in the why me. Mm-hmm. And so absolutely we want to include you because you listened. You made really wise choices.
Yeah, well, and for me,
not always. Who knows?
I've also
not
made
always.
Ladies.
Yeah.
And one thing I'm not going to be, and I'm not going to be a victim.
No.
I refuse to be a victim.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and for me, it's a little more simple than that. You know, I just think you're just plain nice. Just integrity, nice, genuine, sweet. I mean, you're just a sweetheart. And so for me, in addition to your story and things like that, that's really what I want to convey about you in the book as well. Just your genuine nature. And I think you attract people like that just based on you saying all the people in your life who have helped you. It's just a genuine story. It's a wonderful story.
Real gratitude.
Gratitude's a great word for it, filled with gratitude. So
Yep. We've
got about a minute left, and we probably need to wind up. But I just want to start by thanking you for being with us for the full hour, and thank you to everybody who's listened. We just appreciate you so much.
Thank you so much, ladies. It's a true honor. You guys are class acts all the way. I appreciate
you. Thank you. And you can buy his book, The Next Level, A Game I Had to Play, and visit his website, VernonTurner.com. And also you can tweet him. I love this. Vernon Turner. What's the last part again?
TNL.
On Twitter, and that's really him, and he does respond and retweet and say hello. I love that. So, all right, we'll take care, everybody. Katie, everybody have a happy Thanksgiving. We'll be back Yeah, we'll be back on the air Thanksgiving Day with a Good Morning Gratitude show on Thursday, at 10 a.m. on Thanksgiving Day. So thank you, everyone. Thank you for listening, and happy Thanksgiving. I won't say happy holidays yet. I won't bring Christmas into the mix yet or any other holidays. Let's leave it at happy Thanksgiving to everybody in the U.S. All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Enjoy today. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.